From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccant. Most importantly, you are you, you are here, and that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. You guys, I am so very excited. I've wanted to do this episode, I think we all have, for a number of years. First things first, fellow conspiracy realists, if you're watching this video on YouTube, you might notice that our ride or die, Matt Frederick, is rocking some cool specs. We're all fans of cool sunglasses. Until very recently, I was wearing glasses on the daily. I'm terrified of the sun. As, you know, you guys know that's my ancient
You mean
that
hissing sound?
Yeah. So I can't go with the daywalkers unless I have some sunglasses on. And I was looking at some stats. It's crazy because if you ask people in the U.S. if they own a pair of glasses, just glasses in general, prescription, whatever, whether we're talking about really nifty Prada or Ray-Ban sunglasses or whether we're talking, you know, bifocal lenses you would get at Lens Crafters, the answer from those people is probably going to be yes. 89% of women in the U.S. wear sunglasses as of 2016. 83% of dudes do the same. And prescription sunglasses are also on the rise. It's just, it's a big, 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 big business. But according to the critics, and as everybody knows, if you listen to our recent conversations on Strange News, according to the critics, there's something wrong with this industry, something deeply wrong. And you'll hear people.
Yeah, and you know, yeah. There's also something wrong with my glasses because I'm wearing contacts right now, and these are corrective lenses, and I'm getting a headache, so I'm going to take these off.
Is it giving
now.
You double vision?
Yeah.
Well, but you need those glasses or those contacts. That's something we'll get into too, because look, the critics are saying that you can go into a Pearle Vision, you can go into a Lens Crafters, a Sunglass Hut, you can go wherever the heck you want, and you can buy whatever kind of glasses or frames you want, very expensive ones to bottom of the barrel. And those brands and those different prices don't actually matter. Because according to the critics, you're ultimately buying your spectacles from one very, very powerful company, Luxottica. That's how it's usually known. And they've got a different official name now, but we're finally doing it, you guys. How ridiculous will it be if this is the episode after these many years that sinks our show? Why am I asking? Because Luxotta is seriously like super powerful. They're like the Illuminati of spectacles. Here are the facts.
Yeah, I mean, their name even sounds kind of like Illuminati. Yeah, it's true. I mean, so the founder of Luxottica is a dude named Leonardo Del Vecchio. You can't have a name like that unless you're like an eyeglasses mogul. But he established Luxottica at Agordo in the Belluno Dolomites, which is a region of Italy. And the name is derived, it's like a cool portmanteau combination of the Italian words for light and optics, lus and ottica. There's like a Roman phrase Lux Aeterna that means like the eternal light of God. That's what I always think of.
And they call this a perfect marriage. Also,
good branding.
I mean to overemphasize this in the notes. If you saw the notes we have here, this is, that line is in all caps. Sorry, guys. It's not that important. I was just being lazy. But that is a really cool name. And in its early years, this company wasn't a huge, huge player. They made accessories for the optical industry. They manufactured components. They didn't make their own glasses entire. And Del Vecchio saw some opportunity here and maybe was a little bit irritated because he might have felt he was leaving some money on the table. He had originally started his career as a metal worker, but when he moved from Milan to Agordo, he wanted to get into eyewear, and he thought, you know, I've been doing this for a few years. I can make parts for spectacles all the live long day. But what if, he wondered, I could sell my own complete frames? And he did that in 1967 with the first Luxottica collection. And people loved it. People were on board with it. Still wasn't enough. Let's fast forward to 74.
Yeah, at that point, he's like, okay, we've made the metal to make the stuff. Now we're making the whole frames to make the thing. And then he's like, well, what if we could do more than just frames? And he thought, well, how do I get all of these things lined up vertically for my own wealth? And again, like, this is, in my opinion, this is great. This is somebody who's thinking really big, right? This is, I don't know, the backbone of industry, of capitalism when it's working. It's figuring out how to do it. So, but he, the whole idea is he wants to vertically integrate as much of the glasses business, frames and all, as he possibly can.
And the interesting thing, too, is, like, I mean, Del Vecchio, like, his background was in materials. Like, he was a metal worker. He was basically, like, I think an apprentice and never really went to college, or definitely never completed college. But everything that he learned, he did so kind of by the sweat of his brow. And the bigger picture of Luxottica that we're already just starting to dip our toes in, the notion of, like, taking those materials, making it all about the supply chain and the materials, and kind of leaving it to others to do the design work. Though he was into that, too. But he's sort of setting the groundwork for this master plan that we're getting into.
Yeah, very much so. And vertical integration is a kind of unsexy term for an amazing, impressive, and at times dangerous practice, a dangerous strategy. I was thinking of different examples. So, like, imagine we get together and we make potato chips. Conspiracy chips, whatever you want to call them. And we're doing all right. You know, we got four or five flavors. People are into them. But we want to go bigger. So if we were vertically integrating, we would also start maybe owning stores that sold the chips. Maybe we would start owning the potato fields, right? We would start bringing everything in, as you said, Matt, under one figurative roof. And this has a lot of advantages for the people who are able to pull it off. So by the 70s, Del Vecchio is selling Luxottica glasses directly to customers. And he ends up, like you were alluding to, Noel, he ends up buying a distribution company. And this sets off this period of hectic acquisitions and partnerships throughout the 1980s. The company expands. It blows up, really. It explodes internationally. And then something interesting happens in the world of fashion. As you know, I'm not a person very well acquainted with fashion, but in around the 1980s, a lot of people started saying, you know what, glasses aren't just helping me see better. Glasses can be a fashion statement. And now, you know, now we live in a world where some people wear glasses just because they like the look. There's not a corrective lens. They're just like, I'm hot stuff with these Warby Parkers.
I don't know, dude. I call those glasses pretenders. Like, I'm all about a good sunglass, but I think if you don't need the lenses, it's not cool to, like, be a fake glasses wearer during daylight hours.
Hey, come on now. Don't throw too much shade. I got those blue shift lenses, or the ones that aren't corrective.
Yeah, but give you blue blockers.
Yeah, those are great. And they look, I like them. I like the way they look.
Hey, well, you look
that's
good.
At least
you look
doing something functional. That's at least doing something functional. Isn't that supposed to, like, make you, like, less depressed or something like that? Like, what does blue blocking do?
Fight eye strain, I think.
Yeah, that must be it.
Yeah, but it's true. Regardless of how you may personally feel about it, glasses started becoming something more than a medical device. They became a fashion statement, and Luxottica was very much in on the ground floor of this shift in attitude. They were arguably in on the ground floor because, you know, they owned the ground by this point.
Sure.
But they partnered with Armani, which is that's a big deal. Armani is known for being kind of expensive.
Well, let's also consider, like, I mean, you know, in pop culture, like, wearing glasses was a sign of, considered like a sign of weakness or a sign of being some sort of, like, nerd. You know, Clark Kent has to take off his glasses to become cool. And when he puts them on, nobody notices him because he's, you know, a glasses wearing outcast. And that's true in film and TV and all that stuff and comic books. But because of Luxottica and this relationship with Armani and more, you know, moves that they would go on to make, they kind of essentially almost single-handedly made glasses cool and like a fashion accessory rather than, you know, a mark of someone that was like, you know, less than.
It's weird how public opinion can shift so easily. You have the right person, the right influencer rocking glasses, and millions of people can change their mind or change their attitudes about them. Luxottica knew this was a huge opportunity, and they started making partnerships with pretty much every design house that you could easily think of. And then there's another big shift. So we're kind of, we're giving you the high points of a very complex story with a lot of steps. But if you're telling the story of Luxottica, when you talk about Luxottica today, you're probably referring to something that happened in October of 2018, which I think all three of us would like to talk a little bit about from the legal side. Luxottica had a merger, and they created a new powerful holding company. The name of Luxottica now, or its holding company, is Essilor Luxottica, all one word. When this thing happened, it created what's called market capitalization of around $70 billion. Not bad for a hometown guy from Milan, you know what I mean? Like today, this guy, Del Vecchio, is worth an estimated $31.1 billion, just as himself, not as his company. So like this merger, though, it had a lot of people worried, didn't it? I mean, we all watched this war story talk with one of the lawyers involved.
Yeah, I just will jump in really quickly. So Essilor was a freestanding French company, and they specialized in manufacturing lenses, okay? And when you've got the frame manufacturer in Luxottica going, hey, let's merge with this lens manufacturer specialist and create one giant thing, you could imagine that this was a bit worrisome for people who are looking for that big M somewhere in there, a little monopoly action, just to see what could happen.
Yeah, but the merger was weirdly like not that contested, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah, because there's that point where they said these are not things people have to have. Like Ray-Bans are very popular sunglasses, but the authorities, who knows what the backroom situation was like, but the authorities officially concluded after long conversations that Ray-Bans and a lot of sunglasses were, in fact, what they call it, they were not must-have
items. Yeah. And I mean, you know, and that's certainly true. They're more of a status symbol in many ways than they are like a necessity. You can buy a pair of $20, you know, gas station sunglasses, which ironically Ray-Bans used to be. There was a period where like Ray-Bans as a freestanding company were like failing after, you know, getting a bunch of hype because of Tom Cruise wearing them in Risky Business. And I believe also in Top Gun, where he had more of the mirrored shades. They kind of took a dive and were struggling. And there was a period in the late 90s where you could buy a pair of Ray-Bans at like a drugstore for, you know, $20-$30. And Luxottica, when they, you know, bought that brand, or rather, I'm not quite sure exactly the relationship because they have various arrangements, but they turned it around and made it into one of the most recognizable, you know, luxury, quote unquote, you know, glasses brands in the world. And made it like a status kind of thing, or like a symbol of like, hey, I can afford to spend $150 on a piece of plastic that I put on my face.
But the thing is, it's not just Ray-Ban, right?
No, I mean, no.
Nope.
And there's a lot of stuff people get wrong about it. There's a stat that I want to bust later on in the show today. And folks familiar with the story, you can probably guess what that statistic will be. But you're absolutely right, Matt. We can laundry list them, but we're not going to laundry list them all because the show would just be us doing that for like easily 30 minutes. That's how deep this goes. The company still makes sunglasses. They still make prescription frames. And if you talk to them, their two big like buckets are retail distribution, selling sunglasses, frames, lenses in stores. And then the other one is manufacturing or wholesale distribution. So they're not selling directly to consumers in that point, But
yeah, they're selling to the stores that they own, all the damn stores they own.
Yeah, let's, because they own some brands. Like you might think, oh, I can't wait to buy my Vogue glasses. But do I choose between the Vogue or do I choose between the Oakley? The same company makes those. Again, these glasses are seen as a fashion statement, and they're supposed to have certain connotations, right? Because whenever you're buying something that has a brand, you are buying an idea more so than a physical product. And that's just basic. That's day one stuff, baby. So in the world of advertising, but they don't just own a bunch of stuff. They also make these licensing deals or these partnerships with names that are familiar to anybody in the world: Chanel, Coach, Brooks Brothers, Polo, Ralph Lauren, Prada, Versace, you name it. They're involved. They got a hand in the pie.
Legacy companies like Tiffany, you know, I mean, and that relationship involves, you know, those companies basically licensing out their designs to Luxottica, who then get to slap the, you know, Dolce and Gabbana little logo on the side, and therefore they cost $1,000, but they are not made of magic, you know. I mean, they're made of the same materials that everything else is, and don't cost near that to manufacture. I mean, it's like insane markup on these, especially the luxury kind of licensed ones.
You guys forgot Michael Kors. And just want to point out, according to Marshalls, this shirt is Michael Kors.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, Mike. Respect. Credit where it's due. But these things are all true. And if you travel around the world, you might not know that there's a Luxottica operation near you, but there probably is. They have thousands of retail locations in multiple countries: U.S., North, South America, China, South Africa, the United Kingdom, the United Arab Emirates, et cetera, et cetera. But if you walk into an eyeglass store or sunglass store in these areas, you might not know you're walking into a Luxottica store. You might think, should I go to Sunglass Hut, or should I go to Apex by Sunglass Hut, or should I go to Spectacle Hut, or should I go to Lens Crafters?
Or maybe Pearl Vision, huh? Target Optical? Yeah, I've been there. Targets have a lot of lenses that you can buy.
Or OPSM, or a Lorry, or, hey, what about, you know, getting my vision care covered? These frames are expensive. These prescriptions are expensive. Maybe I'll use iMed Vision Care. That seems legit and unrelated to any of these other things. Wait, I'm on their website now, and oh, why is Target Optical listed in Sunglass Hut, Pearl Vision, Lens Crafter? Mm-hmm. Wait a minute, mm-hmm. OPSM.
One Sunglass
I don't understand.
Hut to rule them all.
There's
in the darkness, bind them. Yes, it's true. It's all true, folks. They're not different. Fingers on a hand. That is what we're talking about. Fingers on a hidden hand. And for some people, that's well and good. That's hunky-dory. For other people, that's a huge problem, because Luxottica, they argue, has become more than just the big boy in the room. It has become a monopoly, and therefore it has become dangerous. So we're going to pause for word from our sponsor, and we're going to return, separate some fact from fiction, and figure out just how much of this, if any, is true. Here's where it gets crazy. Finally to this statistic. All right, Matt, Noel, you guys and I talked about this off air. It's something that gets thrown around all the time. You'll hear different versions of it, but it's usually something like, you know, Luxottica controls 80% of the entire sunglass industry. Something must be done. I don't know. That voice is vaguely related to Macho Man Randy Savage. You know, I guess got into optometry or whatever, but
yeah, he always wore Oakley type shades, you know,
he didn't
the
like
super
people
mirrored ones.
Yeah. See in his eyes.
Oh, yeah.
So snap into a monopoly. What's up with the statistic? Well, it makes for great headlines. That's inarguable, but it probably isn't accurate. And I dug in a little, and I think I figured out part of the discrepancy. I want to see what you guys think about this. So if you go to the company itself, they'll be like, yeah, we're doing pretty well. We're pretty proud of ourselves, but we don't sell 80% of all the glasses in the world. They'll tell you that their frames just the frames are probably maybe 10% of sales worldwide. And in the US, that number bumps up to about 20%. So one in five frames, just in general frames that you buy in the US, one in five of those is probably made by Luxottica in some capacity. But Snopes broke this down a little bit. And we need to learn the history of this statistic and how the wires got crossed. This is not meant to defend Luxottica, just to be clear. We're just trying to be accurate here. There's an episode of a show called Adam Ruins Everything. And Adam Ruins Everything, I think, is a solid show. And in this show, they talk about Luxottica. And one of their sources is a blog from Forbes written in 2014. And that blog cites this statistic, and it refers to another source, a Forbes article from 2012. Here's what I think happened. If you look at that 2012 article by Dean Crutchfield, you'll see the claim that more than 80% of major eyewear brands are designed and retailed or sold by Luxottica. That's not the same thing as 80% of all glasses ever. It's more like it would be like if you had a shoe company and you controlled 80% of sneaker brands. That's not the same thing as 80% of all shoes. Does that make sense?
That does make sense.
And I will say, too, I watched a 60 Minutes episode. It was called Sticker Shock. And it was all about, like, it was their kind of deep dive. This was before Luxottica was much of a, I mean, still not really a household name. That's kind of the point. But it was really like, it felt like investigative journalism at the time because it was sort of like almost this shadowy company. And the headline was, "Why do designer glasses cost more than an iPad? The eyewear company with total domination setting astronomical prices." We're going to get to that in a second. But at the time, the CEO, who's interviewed by Leslie Stahl, says that she asks him point blank, "How many people do you think are wearing glasses that are, you know, in some way touched by Luxottica?" And he just said something in the neighborhood. He said billions. So whether or not it's 80% of the overall market share, I mean, billions of people, you know, by the admission of the CEO, whose probably job is it to soft pedal these ideas of monopoly. That's kind of insane and definitely shows some serious domination of that space.
Oh, yeah. And there's not really the thing that's fascinating is there's not a ton of information out there. There's not a lot of, you could say, visibility on some of the ins and outs of how the money moves in this situation. And that's always something that you want to look out for when you're trying to figure out if something is a monopoly. There's no mistake. Luxottica is indeed a Leviathan. It is the largest single player in its industry. But is it a monopoly? Yeah, of course it is. It would be... How could it not be? Luxottica doesn't just own eyewear brands and frames. They don't just own distribution. They own insurance services. They have made these strategic partnerships and acquisitions that give them a significant amount of leverage on the price of a pair of glasses. They can kind of decide how the market moves. And there are plenty of people who will say, well, what's wrong with that? And there are plenty of people who say that is FUBAR. A lot of industry veterans have a complex relationship with Luxottica. There's one guy we found, quote in LA Times, Charles Dehan. He used to be the main dude supplying frames to the company LensCrafters before they were acquired by, you guessed it, Luxottica. And he says there's no real competition in the entirety of the industry anymore. He thinks Luxottica, and there's a quote from him, they bought everyone and they set whatever prices they please. And those markups can be incredibly high, as anybody who's ever purchased glasses can attest. Like when we're talking about a markup, a profit margin, the numbers might surprise you.
Yeah, there was a pretty great article from The Guardian, if I'm not mistaken, where some former LensCrafter high-level execs were talking about the markup being like bordering on 1,000%.
Well, yeah, I mean, think about it. Look at these things. How much did these cost? I get it. You're molding some pieces of metal and some plastics, and the lenses aren't, you know, simple to produce. But should this be like $300? $400? that's what they charge people in these like lens crafters like stores, especially when you're getting your eyes checked and everything. These are some of the cheapest glasses I could find. And even with eye insurance, I had to pay a lot of money for these. And it's like, I don't get it as a consumer.
Well, just really quickly, the CEO, Andrea Guerrera, in that 60 Minutes piece I mentioned, his defense of that as well. This is an item that you have to wear on your face all the time. It's the perfect crystallization of form and function. And that's not easy to do. That's what he has to say about that.
Yeah, because there is a lot of research that goes into this, right? There are people who disagree with that estimation. Folks like a journalist named David Lazarus, who was writing for the LA Times, he didn't really mince words when he called prescription eyewear, quote, perhaps the biggest single mass market consumer ripoff in the world. In 2020,
oh, man.
Yeah. I know, right? And oil companies are still a thing, but whatever. In 2012, he broke down the math and he verified that the average cost of a pair of frames, not lenses, mind you, just the frames, was about $231. And that was according to VSP. VSP is the biggest provider of eye care, eye insurance benefits. So if you look at the average cost of a pair of just single lenses, that's $112. And those are the simple lenses. If you need some bells and whistles, then the price can double. So if we just take the base value there, 231 plus 112, then what we see is that $343 tens would be the average that people would pay all told, not counting an eye exam.
I think that's exactly what these cost. And these are made by Altair, another company, not Luxottica. Altair is associated with VSP, like directly associated with VSP.
Oh, yeah.
What the heck?
Are we being had? That's the question. Yeah. And of course, people also pay a premium for designer brands. Again, many, many of these brands are owned by Luxottica or Luxottica has a hand in their production. So naturally, this causes people to say, what am I paying for? If so many of these glasses are made in the same place, is the difference just like a logo stamped on the side? Are the pricey posh glasses essentially the same as the stuff at the lower end? And it's a good question. But to be clear, you know, they have different designs and things like that. Supporters of this system say, look, these costs are justified. You're not just buying a pair of glasses. You're buying the association with the brand. You're buying the designer's work. You're buying the research that goes into making new frames, better, lighter lenses, and ongoing innovations. But to a lot of critics, this one company, as David Lazarus put it in his articles, is getting away with fleecing people for decades. And you know who agrees? The guy who founded LensCrafters.
What?
Yeah, he's in an interview and he's like, oh, yeah, this markup is real. His name's E. Dean Butler. He says you can get amazingly good frames for $4 to $8. And then for $15, he says, you can get designer quality frames made, the stuff you get at Prada. And
good shut up.
Yeah. No,
this is real.
This is real.
Yeah, but it still doesn't have, it's not Prada though. You know, it's all about that stamp. It's all about that like status symbol. You know what I mean? Like there are people that really matters to. I try not to be one of them.
You can make for several hundred dollars?
I could put
Prada on everything I own. It's a couple hundred dollars.
It's the same with like shoe people, you know, like, you know, hype beast type stuff with like particular brands of shoe that are crazy amounts of money, or it's about scarcity. You know, it's a combination of all that stuff. But, you know, it is more about this manufactured idea that Ben was referring to than it is about the quality of the actual good. I have plenty of cheap sunglasses, but I also own a pair of $100+ Ray-Bans because it made me feel cool to own them. It made me feel like I was in some kind of club. I'm going to be completely honest. I know it's sort of pathetic, but it is what it is. And I know a lot of people feel that way.
No, it's not.
Definitely not pathetic.
A lot of people do feel that way. It's a natural human instinct, you know? And I want to drop one more piece here. Butler also says that when it comes to lenses, they cost about $1.25 a pop.
So
$2.50. Those are the lenses. All these same components we just described, can be, you know, they can be combined into spectacles or sunglasses, and those can sell for as much as $800 US. This is kind of nuts. Now, of course, if it's your money, it's your money, and spend it as you choose. No one's here to tell you what to do, but I think it's a good question for us to ask, which is, how much of a role does Luxottica play in setting these prices? How much should they play? And why are those questions important in the first place? Because, right, we're talking about just sunglasses. We're talking about just glasses. That might not seem important to a lot of people, but we're going to pause for a word from our sponsor. And when we return, we're going to dive a little bit deeper into why this matters. We've returned. Okay, so that's the situation. What on earth are we supposed to do? First, we gotta admit, corrective lenses and glasses, right, they have ascended to the level of fashion, but they're also still medical devices. They're necessary for billions of people. And that means it becomes, arguably, I think this is a solid argument, it becomes a medical concern, like part of healthcare. You know what I mean? Like people need to have glasses for more than just looking cool.
That's why I wanted to talk about this so much with you guys, because that's the only reason I have glasses, because I had to. I couldn't see, right? And the first pair of lenses I got was at a Lens Crafters. I remember it very vividly. It was at North Point Mall. Oh my God, I can see the whole thing happening right now. It was not crazy expensive. I didn't have vision insurance or anything like that, and it wasn't crazy expensive. I remember the lenses themselves being really expensive for some reason. I don't, maybe I'm misremembering that. I don't have to write to my parents or something. I was a kid, and I remember something like there was such an upsell while I was in this place that's supposed to be an eye doctor, but it really felt like a lens distribution store, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's what it felt like.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It feels like it's more of a store that also has an eye doctor working there, right?
Yeah.
And that's a very common setup, you know, and even if you don't like glasses, but you have to wear them, you get the eye exam, you're probably going to look for the easiest answer, right? So you've just had your eye exam, they've got your prescription, why not knock it all out while you're here? Why not get the contacts? Mm-hmm. Why not get the glasses? And even if you can point to examples of glasses that are more expensive just because they're fashionable, We cannot escape the simple fact. These are not nifty little sartorial nods for most people wearing them. They're necessary. You need to see. And if there's one company reigning over an industry that important, then those folks have no choice but to interact with it. That's it. There's no other option. And that doesn't, like, and maybe it's helpful in the long term for this company to have many guises, for it to appear as though there are many, many more manufacturers and many, many more stores than there are in reality. But how do you fix it? You know, would you say, okay, we need Uncle Sam to step in and prevent price gouging, right? Like, consider the example of insulin. Insulin, the price has exploded, right, recently, and it really shouldn't.
Is it only a monopoly if it's something that people need, like the internet, like telecom or whatever? It's maybe a little easier. The barrier to approving a monopoly there is a little easier. I'm just confused. Like, this seems like a straight up monopoly, and yet they were allowed to have that merger where it's all of the pieces of the puzzle, you know, the lenses and the frames, but yet it sailed right on through with very little pushback from regulators. So I'm just wondering, like, is it because, but then the medical device, you know, angle of it, especially the fact that they literally own that insurance carrier we talked about, iMed Vision, which self-proclaimed the second largest vision benefits company in the United States, serving approximately 52 million members. And who do you think they cover? Where do you think the places that you go that are like in network are? It's those places named off at the beginning of the show that we mentioned that they also own. So how is that not a total conflict of interest? I just don't understand how this is allowed to exist.
Yeah, a monopoly doesn't have to be over a necessary good. It could be like a you could have, like, back in the day, you might have a monopoly on the fur trade. People like wearing fur, they like using it for stuff, but you're not gonna die or have your quality of life significantly impacted if you don't have fur, right? In the case of clothing, you would just wear something else. So that the argument there is that, again, these are not must-have items, these are optional, but that isn't really the case. It's not basely untrue, but it is a little bit misleading to frame it that way, especially when you consider how convenient that makes the company's position. So how would you, if you said this was price gouging, how would you tackle it? You know, would you take an approach similar to the way regulators have tackled the pricing on EpiPens, which is definitely a must-have item for some people? If you're a fan of the free market, if you fall more on that side of political economic philosophy, you might say, I don't know. I think the government interference for sunglasses or glasses in general, I think that's a bridge too far. But there's a response to that. And I think it's a response that's fair to ask. Didn't the free market pave the way for Luxottica in the first place? Like, they're, again, their perspective is, you know, we're doing very well as a business. That's what we do. And we're the best at it. But we're not some kind of evil empire. They'll say we're giving people a ton of options. You know, we're giving them a ton of choices, right? Not everybody has to buy $800 glasses. We have other stuff available. That's their argument. But you can easily see why a lot of folks would have a problem with that, both inside and outside the industry. One thing that we should note is this may not be the situation for forever or for long, because now there are new competitors out there. There are places like Zenni. You guys remember Zenni?
100%. People love Zenni because they make stylish looking frames for an affordable cost. Clearly, I am sponsored by them. No, I'm not. But like Warby Parker, you know, they've kind of cornered the market on internet only frames. But the question there is, like, are they just going to, we didn't talk about this, but I'd love to bring it up.
Yeah.
Oakley, we mentioned, and I think I maligned somewhat. Sorry, any Oakley wearers out there. But Oakley kind of called them on this stuff. As a company, they called them on this price fixing, you know, shenanigans. And what do you think that Luxottica did? They dropped them from all their stores.
Ah, there we go.
And then they bought them in a hostile takeover.
Yeah, they sank their stock.
We sank their stock because if you're the only game in town in terms of retail, aside from little niche, you know, stores. I mean, Sunglass Hut, that's kind of where it's at. It's in every mall. You think of, like, where do I go to get sunglasses aside from, like, some cool local store that sells all kinds of stuff, or maybe, like, you know, boutique type shops. You're going to say Sunglass Hut or one of those places. So if your product is dropped from the one kind of hub for buying sunglasses, you're screwed. And then once their stock price tanked, they bought them for, like, a deep discount.
That's some real I drink your milkshake stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it is.
And it was successful. It worked. You'll see other people criticize Luxottica. This is not necessarily a hidden thing. It was Last Week Tonight had a piece on it. We mentioned Adam Ruins Everything. There's been a lot of reporting over the years, but the situation hasn't really changed. That's the thing. People might be more aware of it, but that's not stopping what people would characterize as monopolistic practices. And this is not a case like the De Beers cartel, which has to advertise in the U.S. through a number of other fronts. You know what I mean? Luxottica is here. They actually just relocated a bunch of jobs to Dallas. They've been expanding during the COVID pandemic. They've got irons in the fire, and it makes me wonder what the future is out there or what it should be, right? Should authorities interfere with this? Should they say, hey, this is we're using antitrust laws to break up this monopoly? I don't know, because right now, at least in the U.S., the government has been very, very friendly to monopolies. Check out our two-part episode on lobbying.
Yeah. Well, and add to that, this year in March, EssilorLuxottica acquired another giant company called Grand Vision for $8.5 billion. So, like, they're still expanding.
Oh, yeah.
It blows my mind to imagine that they're already that big and they're just going to continue. The blob is going to continue expanding out.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
I mean, does it surprise you, though? I mean, it seems like it's what they've, from back when our boy Leonardo was just a wee lad, in Milan, he had a dream, and it wasn't to make handmade artisanal glasses for the people. It was to be like the octopus that makes glasses for the universe.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you're right, but it's a weird situation where for this specific one in March that they just got antitrust approval for, or whatever it is, to go along with the acquisition, they had to sell off a bunch of their stores in Italy and the Netherlands and a couple other places in order to have more stores under this new brand that they're purchasing. It's just a strange shuffling in the end to, I think, vie for more market share. But I don't know. I'm not like that attorney who was being interviewed for that one thing we watched, everybody on this call watched. It's just so nonchalantly talking about how it's not a monopoly.
We like to do what we want. Takeaway. But yeah, check that out. Just go to YouTube and search War Stories Luxottica. I think that'll get you there. It's an interview with the lawyer who shepherded a lot of that merger. So that is where the state of glasses is at. And increasingly people are, seeing the situation with more clarity, but that doesn't necessarily mean anything would change. And there are a lot of people who think maybe stuff shouldn't change. Maybe that's just how the spectacle sausage gets made. You know what I mean? Maybe, I know, not a pleasant image. But we hope we've been fair, at least to give you Luxottica's perspective as well as the perspective of other people. But the truth of the matter is that these things are relatively inexpensive to manufacture, and they are sold with a very high profit margin. That's not necessarily illegal, at least as the law stands now. But then you have to ask yourself one of the questions we asked ourselves in our episode on Alec, not Baldwin, a different Alec, mm-hmm. and our episode on lobbying, which is how much credibility can you give to laws when we're talking about entities that may be powerful enough to write the laws that they, that they are constrained by? And can Luxottica do that? Are they at the point where they just buy a politician's time? I don't know.
I think maybe.
Let us know.
Certainly doesn't feel like they owe anybody any favors.
Right. Yeah, I keep thinking about that quote from a show we did earlier where the guy like on record, blah, blah, blah. Check it out if you want to hear it.
What was it? It was something involving a sex act, but it meant to be a stand-in for like, this guy owns everybody, right? Kind of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you can find it. Just check out our earlier, I believe it was Strange News or Listener Mail. But it's out there. And now we pass the contact lenses to you folks. What do you think should or should not be done about this? Do you think that this is price gouging? Do you think that it victimizes maybe vulnerable people who have no other option? Or do you think this is just business as business goes?
Yeah, we want to know. You can find us everywhere online. If Facebook is working, we're there. If Instagram is working, we're there too, as well as YouTube and several other places. Usually it's conspiracy stuff on Instagram, conspiracy stuff show. If you don't want to use social media because, you have a problem with it for one reason or another, you don't have to. You can call us. We have a phone number.
That's right. It's 1-833-STDWYTK. 3 minutes is the time which you shall have to leave your missive. Make sure to let us know that it's okay to use the audio on the show, and then you might hear yourself on one of our weekly listener mail episodes. Also, if you would be so kind as to tell us what to call you, give yourself a cool nickname. We're cool with anonymous, whatever. If you want to just use one of those fancy voice disguiser things on you, we might even go so far as to do that if your story is super cool.
Hey, and if you got more to say, you want to send us more things, why not use our good old-fashioned email address? We are
conspiracy@iheartradio.com, a subsidiary of Luxottica. Kidding.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.